Your On The Mark podcast is loading now. The On The Mark podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome everyone back. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, 100 years. 1915 to 2015. Joined by the head coach, Bucknell, Dave Paulson. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Happy New Year to you, by the way.
Happy New Year to you, Steve.
Dave, I want to get to something that's part of the game, but it's not directly related to your team. And this is in general commentary, because I certainly don't want you to comment on stuff that, obviously, where you sit back and the Patriot League calls you and says, hey, what's the deal? In terms of how the game is officiated right now, block charge in particular, last year they had reverted to a point where, you know, you really had to do something really to get a charge. Now it looks like they're more back to where they were 2 years ago. Which area do you prefer in terms of how they're calling that particular play?
I like the way they're calling it now and the way they did 2 years ago. Last year it was so extreme. If you just drove the ball in the basket, put your head down like you were like a tailback, and just threw it up there and just sought contact, you know, you could be totally out of control, and it never rewarded good defense. So I think they're back to a more sensible way. I don't think any of the officials like the way that they were told to call the rule last year. And, you know, so I think they're doing a better job of it now.
Hey, one of the keys in conference play is protect the home court and then see what you can steal on the road. You won your home court opener against a very good American team, lost a tough one to Colgate. Now you got Lafayette coming up on Wednesday night. I know you take it game by game, but does that tennis thing about hold serve, break serve in terms of home and away, does that come into play in conference play?
Well, it does. You know, and again, we take it one game at a time, but when you're looking at it globally, you win all your home games and you split on the road, you got a chance to win the conference championship.
Right.
Now, the good news was we played a terrific and complete game against American at home. They picked to win our league, you know, played very, very well defensively, played with great discipline offensively. It was our best game of the year. Followed it up with 20 excellent minutes of basketball at Colgate, and then really played poorly in the second half. And so that was frustrating because there was a chance to get one of those on the road. And Colgate's vastly improved. They start four seniors and a fourth-year junior, and they're talented. They're in first place in our league right now. But we had them on the ropes, and we didn't throw the knockout punch. So that's disappointing.
Yeah. Every coach wants that full 40 minutes, which means you have to get to a level of consistency. Are you seeing the needle swing more often toward getting closer to the 40 minutes, or do you see it swing too often to the minus side of that?
I do think, Steve, you know, the best predictor for success in games is performance and practice. And I've seen our guys become a more consistent practice team. I've seen guys, you know, guys are maturing. You know, we're going to end up having two freshmen in the starting lineup starting on Wednesday. You know, and they've been really good for us, and Nana Fallon and J.C. Shao. But they're freshmen, you know, so understanding the complexities of the game and what it takes to be focused night in, night out, day in, day out, every possession, you know, is a process. So they're getting better at that. We're starting a sophomore point guard. You know, I think he's starting to become a little more consistent. But again, the first indicator is practice performance, and then it's game performance at home. And then the last barometer is game performance on the road. And, you know, that's where we've only won one road game. And so that's got the mark of a good team and a veteran team, is to be able to win it on the road. And you know, we're not there yet, but we're getting better. I can sense us getting better daily.
Lafayette comes in Wednesday. right now they are 20th in the nation in offensive efficiency. I mean, their average points per possession is a little bit better than 1.1. When you face a team with that kind of efficiency, give me an idea of the pressure it puts on you as to what your efficiency needs to be and also how you need to play them.
Yeah, you know, they're really, really, really good offensively. And I think they're the number one three-point shooting team in the country, and they're in the top 5 or 10 in field goal percentage. As you said, offensive efficiency, they're so good. And they spread you out. They really create dilemmas for you because they play with four guards. Now, their fourth guard is a 6'7" kid named Heinrichs, you know, wow, scoring inside and out. So they're really explosive. As the old line, you know, how do you hold Michael Jordan under 20 points is you make him guard on the defensive end. So I think our ability to guard them will start with our ability to run good, intelligent, discipline, and at times, you know, very deliberate. The main things you can do. I think the other thing you can do is, you know, because they're a little smaller, you got to punish them on the offensive glass. So that if we're starting after made baskets, or even if we're starting our defensive possession after they had to guard for 30 seconds, I think that takes a little of the rhythm out of their offensive game. And then, you know, you have to give something up a team that's good, you know, and so we don't want to give up freeze, which means we're going to be a little vulnerable to dribble penetration. So we, you know, we spent a lot of work today in practice, you know, working on taking away threes and then finishing our defense off of dribble penetration. It's hard, you know. They're the best offensive team in our league, and they're very veteran with three senior starters.
Then again, you know, for what you'll see with most young teams, at least in my experience, is that if you put them in a home environment, they normally perform better. Your points per possession are dramatically higher at home than they are on the road. And I'm not telling you anything. This is just for the audience, obviously. But, I mean, you know, you're 1.055 at home, which is really good. What do you see in your team's efficiency at home, Dave, that you see some things click because the environment means something to kids?
Yeah, I just think, you know, when, in basketball especially, you know, familiarity with the lighting and the – and baskets and just your routine and a comfort level, you know, it's dramatic. And then the ability to defend, it's just, you know, teams don't tend to shoot as well on the road. So then, you know, you're running offense after getting the ball off a rebound instead of a made basket. You know, so it's easier to get into your offensive flow. So I think as part of it is that. But, you know, certainly, you know, we've got a great home court environment. Even, you know, our two home losses, you know, we didn't really have much trouble scoring the ball. We just had a hard time defending the other team. So we have shot the ball and played well offensively at home. And I think we're continuing to emerge. We're becoming a more diverse offensive team, you know, with the emergence of Nana Fowlin, with the emergence of J.C. Shaw, with the continued development of John Azzanero to have some – secondary scoring options to complement Chris Haas. So I think we're emerging offensively. Our defense still lags behind our offense.
Right. When you look at analytics, obviously there are many ways to look. I know the DVD means a ton to you, so you know what you're seeing. Practice means a lot to you. What analytics do you like to look at? To, you know, because the box score in the end tells you a lot too, but what analytics do you look at? Plus, minus, points per possession? What do you look at that's important to you, the coach?
Well, I think, you know, when we're looking at our own team, our defensive efficiency, our offensive efficiency, and then the areas that we've chosen to be good at, because we can't be good at everything with the schedule we play. You know, right. In terms of the analytics, what we had been really, really good at in years past is we did not turn the ball over and we did not give up second shots. We've never been a team that's caused a lot of turnovers. That just hasn't been our MO. We've been more of a contain, make them shoot over the top, and hold them to one shot. So early in the year, and the other thing that we were always very good at was we did not foul. So we may, and those are the three things I think you can control. You know, taking care of the ball, keeping teams off the glass, and not fouling. And we are starting to do a little, and those, you know, if we take care of those three areas, then a team's got to go and play excellent offense, hit tough shots to beat us. And, you know, if they do that, well, then you tip your hat to them. But I just think, you know, key fouls and second shots and turnovers on our end. Again, as we've gotten elite play, you know, we've gotten better in those areas and still have to get better yet.
Dave, idealistically, obviously you're going to have to hit your shots, but idealistically, if this were a 55-60 possession game on Wednesday night, how beneficial could that be for your team?
Well, no question about it. Yeah, we want to, you know, it's funny. In years past, we wanted more possessions against Lafayette, where we felt we,
right.
And we have a deeper team than Lafayette, but they like to play very fast. You know, so we wanted more possessions in the past, but now we want, I think, fewer possessions. And really make their guards, who are very skilled, but, you know, a little bit, you know, they're maybe not as physical as our guards. You make them get through screens and make it a physical game for them.
Dave, a pleasure. Best of luck on Wednesday night. Appreciate the time you carved out for us today. And Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year. Thanks, Steve.
Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at Bucknell. I know we talked about analytics and all that, but these are all different things that I think in today's game you need to talk about at this point, because these things are coming into play now. When Lafayette is 20th in the nation in points per possession, that has some meaning as to the kind of efficiency that you need to play with during the course of the game, and that's why I brought it up. We will come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com and a century of Sunbury Motors. Here's to the second century on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Kevin said straight out in the opening hour of the show his team got cheated on Saturday night.
No, I said my team got outplayed on Saturday night. I am came man out enough to admit it.
Cheated. I mean, that's
cheated. Cheated. Listen, you can't have 50. You can't have 5 15-plus yard penalties in a game and win it. You just can't. And you can't get sacked 5 times and win a game. They got outplayed. They got the Flacco 1 time. I thought the offensive line for the Ravens played really, really well. You know, they were getting to Roethlisberger with a 3-man rush here.
They just didn't
play well.
Right, here's my issue with the Steelers, in all honesty.
I have a lot Bell's, right now, but...
Bell's a big loss, okay?
No question.
But you've got enough on this team that you should be able to compensate for it. I mean, Tate and Harris, as pedestrian as they are, should still be able to gain 50, 60 yards. And Roethlisberger is still Roethlisberger. You still have one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the game on your side of the field.
But he did not look good early in this game. And you and I mentioned it during one of the breaks. I said to you, it felt to me like Roethlisberger, especially in the first half, was trying for a 14-point touchdown pass instead of just going with what was there. He was trying to overcome the fact that he didn't have Bell behind him. It was trying to make every play.
Well, I watched the basketball team on Saturday night try to make 10-point shots. You're like, hey, yo, dog, there's 17 minutes to go.
Yeah, they don't exist. Shoot what's there.
Run some offense, play some D. Then run some offense, play D. They only gave up four baskets in the second half. Four. You know that? Defensively, Penn State gave up four baskets in the second half. Now, that was enough to allow them on a night where they just couldn't shoot the ball to save their souls. But they need more out of the front court. You know, when Penn State won the NIT in 2009, one of the things that they could do is that when they bogged down offensively and shots weren't falling, they could dump the ball down into Jamel Cornley, and 75% of the time you would either get three results. Basket missed but a foul and two coming up. Basket counts at a foul. 75% of the time, that would be the result of the play. When you were bogged down, said, you know, you come out of a timeout. And, you know, I'd say it straight on the air. I said, look, they're going to go down to Cornley here. It was no big mystery because he'd plant himself on that block and he'd make that catch and he'd make some sort of play. 25% of the time would be a foul up. 75% of the time, you get something positive out of it. Two free throws, basket, basket, and a free throw. Okay, those would be the results that you'd get. They don't have that right now. In fact, for example, when Brandon Taylor catches the ball, he'll start out in the block and he'll float out to get the ball. Now he's 12 feet from the basket. I don't want you 12 feet from the basket. Get yourself down into the paint. Back them in. Make them play defense. You know, take something point blank. They need more from the front court right now. Rutgers did block eight shots on Saturday night. That's to their credit. Kadeem Jack played very well. But, for example, there was a play with about 3 minutes to go where they threw the ball into the far corner, and Donovan Jack took a three. And I looked at it, I was like, what the heck are you taking a three-point shot for? You know, here's the bothersome part about that shot. I've never seen him make that shot. Ever. Shoot around, playground, any kind of ground. Now, when I've seen him make threes, it's been usually top of the key and then maybe slightly to the wing. I've never seen him make a corner three, ever. Well, he's 0-6 now in threes. I don't want him shooting that shot. Well, what are you doing? It was emblematic. That shot was not the shot that lost them a game or anything like that, but it was emblematic of the night where everybody was, I can make the shot. I can turn the whole game around here. Turn the game around and run something solid. Okay? Do something solid. That's how you turn the game around. Because defensively, they had it going. 50 points. I thought the winning number, that Penn State got the 65, they'd win. And I figured they'd win by 7 or 8 points at 65. I went far off on what Rutgers was going to do. I was way off on what Penn State was going to do. So now you got Michigan tomorrow night. Now, here's the other part. Minnesota, Illinois, Penn State, all three have something in common. All three are 0-2. What's the other thing they have in common?
I'm listening. I'm waiting to hear. I don't know.
All three were the ones that started by playing two in a row on the road.
Now, how would I know that?
You're a co-host of this show, aren't you?
Yes, but you give me much more credit for being smarter than I really am.
I'm going to have to reevaluate that.
Hey, I admit it.
I hope that makes a promo.
I'm the one that controls the promo. What do you think?
Negative, Ghost Rider.
The pattern is full.
Oh, I think one text to Drew Kelly, I got it done on tomorrow's show.
Good luck.
I mean, instead of saying, hi, this is Steve Jones, join me later today. Oh, yeah, that one. You give me a lot more credit than being smart, I really am. I'm going to have to reevaluate that. Come on. America wants to hear that in a promo. Come on, they're sitting on the street right now. Sorry, Ghostwriter, the pattern is full.
The pattern is full.
So they got Michigan tomorrow night. Look, this, I can sit here and give you scouting reports about Michigan and so forth. You know, Zach Irvin's a good player. Walton's a good player. You know, Terrace LaVert, I think, is really good and so forth. But they're struggling scoring, too. Across the board. This comes down to Penn State. Penn State plays well tomorrow night. Penn State will win. If Penn State plays well tonight, Penn State will win. They do not have to have a scenario now where Penn State plays well and the other guy has a mediocre off night. No. If Michigan plays well and Penn State plays well, Penn State will win the game. Okay? That's where the program is now. The program is not in a state of, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? We need the other guy to play poorly. No, you don't. You play well in your ballpark, you will win the game. You're going to have the best player on the floor to begin with in Newville. Final half hour. Kevin Herb breaks down officiating in the NFL. As only he can.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Steve joining us today from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll be talking about another great Sunbury Motors car coming up in the next few days. Lots of sports on the radio the next few days as well. Tonight we'll have CBS Sports Radio, but then tomorrow night it is Shikellamy Braves Wrestling. Shikellamy basketball on Wednesday night, more wrestling on Thursday night after the coaches show at 6:05, and then Friday night we go back on the hardwood for basketball on WKOK. Of course, you can always find the sports schedule online at WKOK.com.
Yeah, that'd be a good spot.
I thought so.
So, officiating, you were really whining, moaning, and complaining about the officiating.
I haven't said a word about it.
I talked to you far more often than everybody else. I mean,
yeah, well, you must be reading somebody else's text messages. I know.
I mean, the language. My goodness. You know, there's no way that came from your son's Twitter account.
Listen, the day he has a Twitter account is the day you tweet.
Well, that's not happening.
Exactly.
That's not happening.
His comment about social media is, he goes, I'm not that social.
Oh, jeez.
I said, I have a friend that's the same way. He goes, let me guess, Mr. Jones. I said, you got it, buddy.
One quick thing. Could we... want to get to this, and that's the passing of Stuart Scott. 49 years old. Obviously too young. Too young. Trailblazer. A guy that was One of the things I tell my broadcasting class is no matter what, always be yourself. And he went out, and I'm sure along the way there was some network executive somewhere that told him, look, you can't do all this booyah stuff and things like that. And he just did it, and it worked. He was beloved by his coworkers. You know, I've met a lot of people at ESPN. He was not one of them. I don't think I was ever in the same room with him. Beloved by his coworkers, you can tell by the tributes they paid to him. Beloved by other members of the media. Beloved by the athletes who loved him. And that speaks volumes about him and his life. And not only that, the guy was an excellent, excellent broadcaster. It is not easy to sit in that chair, get instructions from the control room while you are trying to execute highlights at the same time, and he did it as if he was the only person in the room. So, 49 is too young. Way too young. Now, we're going to get to something that is right in your wheelhouse.
Okay.
Oregon's going to wear gray uniforms for the national championship game. I figured this would be something you could talk about.
Why in the world would they wear gray?
Nike has announced that Oregon and Ohio State will wear for the national championship game. Oregon will have no green and no bright yellow. They will wear new away white jerseys with wings on their shoulders and the Fighting Ducks logo on the sleeves, both in silver. The team will wear white helmets with gray pants. The Buckeyes will have their new home uniform on. They'll wear the scarlet jerseys featuring gray stripes on the sleeves and black numerals on the shoulders, a tribute to the school's 1968 national championship team, Rex Kern and Company.
I love how you say Nike has announced. Well, I mean, I understand. I understand why. I get it. I just find it funny that Nike has announced what they'll wear.
Well, they paid for it.
Right. No, I get it. I totally get it.
Okay, schools do not pay for their uniforms. They don't pay any money for that. They're each also going to have the silver Nike swoosh on the front, as they did for the semifinals. In case you're wondering, the new jerseys, by the way, will sell for $160 a piece.
Great googly moogly.
Nike is paying $600,000 to Oregon in cash and $2.2 million in an equipment allowance this year. Ohio State, they get $1.5 million in cash and $2.5 million in equipment from Nike. You're asking yourself, where does the $600,000 go and where does the $1.5 million go? Where do you think?
In each school's athletic fund.
No.
Really?
Think a little more singular.
Are you sure it doesn't go there?
I'm positive.
Okay, tell me where, Steve.
Mark Helfrich will get $600,000 and Urban Meyer gets $1.5
million. No. I'm stunned. Sorry, I have to be a little more believable there.
I mean, that's, you know, when you see coaches make, ex-coach makes $5 million, the school does not pay them the entire $5 million. I mean, I don't know what the base number is. You can look up James Franklin's contract online if you want as to what his base number is. But then the rest of it's made up through Learfield. And I think Ohio State's an IMG school. So Learfield or IMG... that's for doing the coaches show during the season, the talk show, call-in show, for doing the pregame show, for doing the halftime interview, and for doing the postgame show, and for the television show. You know, Penn State is a television show. They're going to have another one next year as well. Okay, so that's part of it. And the other part is Nike. And it turns out in this case, they're both Nike schools, as opposed to Under Armour or Adidas, which are the other two primary suppliers. I will say this about the bowl season, and I thought about you as I watched this play out.
Okay.
I would say 80 to 90% of the teams that played in bowl games just wore their uniforms.
Right.
In other words, nothing crazy off the, you know what I mean, off the rails or anything like that. There are a few that did. I mean, let's take Oregon out. They don't count because they change every game. But, I mean, Alabama wore what Alabama wears. Ohio State wore what they wear. Florida State wears what they, I mean, helmets, the whole thing. There are a couple I saw that were totally different. I saw that Washington wore some silver with like a purple tint on top or whatever. Or Oklahoma State wore, I don't know what the hell's on their helmet. I don't know what that was. But everybody else just wore their helmets and wore their normal jerseys. Nobody went out. You know, Auburn looked like traditional Auburn. Wisconsin looked like traditional Wisconsin. Michigan State, you know, Baylor to a point. Yeah, how about Baylor? I told you, fourth quarter. What did I tell you?
I don't remember exactly what you said there. What did you?
I said teams like that can't stand when the game gets physical and they get whacked in the mouth. Well, they got physical and got whacked in the mouth, and they wore down. They were all. I mean, they're trying to put. They're trying to make sure that you're out of gas in the fourth quarter. This time, they had nothing in the fourth quarter. Nothing. It's not their game. Playing football is not their game. They wanted to be a route, basketball, and grass. I mean, I give Art Briles credit. That's how he's won. I don't blame. That's your MO. I mean, you got to figure out some way to win with what you have. So I give him credit for that. I've told you over the years, I find it completely unentertaining to watch. I'm like,
and you're right. That's the first time I really sat down and watched them, and that was not entertaining. Oregon, well,
I thought it got entertaining in the fourth quarter.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the Oregon game, and it was 12 seconds between whistle snap.
The average ended up being 12. That's because Oregon decided in the fourth quarter to run some clock.
But still, 12 seconds. I mean, that's insane.
Hey, if you play it right, you can get the ball back yourself in 45, 50 seconds. Okay? That's if you play it right, you get a three and out. Okay? But the problem with that is that if they run enough plays, and they're doing it on pure volume where they're running 80 to 90 plays in a game, you'd better be in shape.
Yeah.
The problem Ohio State is going to have in this game a week from tonight is going to be Marcus Mariota. It's one thing to sit there and play Blake Sims, who is, I think, an average college quarterback. He's not poor, he's not mediocre, but he certainly is not great. He's average. They're going to go from playing an average college quarterback to playing a great college quarterback. And a guy that's got some real, if you rush him, he's got speed and he can get to the edge, and that becomes a problem. The unsung hero to me for Ohio State, and I ended up voting him on the second team, all Big Ten as a write-in, is Lee, the freshman outside linebacker. That kid's going to be really good. Bosa is going to have problems with some of this. See, what happens is that where Alabama has been dominant and most of the SEC West has been dominant over the years has been on the defensive front. Their defensive fronts have been superior. Ohio State had the better defensive front. I think Penn State has a better defensive front right now than Alabama does. But I think what's interesting is that when you look at the SEC, and these things go in cycles, so this is not a total indictment of the SEC, just like going overboard and going, oh, they're awesome, incredible, nobody can beat them. It goes overboard too, all right? But the final weekend of the regular season, what happened? The SEC went 0-4 against four ACC teams. Clemson beat South Carolina. Florida State beat Florida. Georgia Tech beat Georgia. And Louisville beat Kentucky. Now, remember we had on John Cooper from SouthernFootball.com?
Right.
And remember the East, that's a little weaker.
Yeah, I remember him kind of downplaying the East.
Now let's examine the final weekend of the college football season. Ohio State beats Alabama. Wisconsin beats Auburn. Mississippi State is beaten by Georgia Tech. And TCU beats Ole Miss. What do those four SEC teams have in common?
Well, there's a lot of big names in the SEC that lost bowl games.
Yes, but those are four SEC West teams. That is the upper four teams in the SEC West, and they went 0-4.
I thought this was an interesting stat that I stumbled bowl opponents, and this includes losses by Alabama, Mississippi, and Mississippi State, which were the SEC's top-ranked teams.
Yet, I pointed out that when it came to the SEC, that two traditional middle-of-the-pack teams, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, suddenly were upper tier. And I told you that didn't quite feel right to me. What the heck made both of them upper-tier SEC teams in a year? There's nothing. There was nothing last year that indicated that. I know Ole Miss has recruited well, but them recruiting well gave me a feeling that maybe in 15 or 16 that, you know, that things would start to come together. And I know they had a veteran quarterback in Bo Wallace.
Yeah, good I was going to say, bad he's not Bo. Bad.
Good Bo, bad Bo, bad Bo. Again, TCU, three picks and a fumble. We reverted back to bad Bo. But that something about that didn't feel right. What suddenly made them, traditional middle-of-the-pack teams, now suddenly considered to be power teams? And when you look at the non-conference schedules for each, I don't know. Now you look at the Big Ten. Big Ten obviously has done well. They've gone 5-5. Penn State continues to do its part. They get to a bowl game. Again, last 20, Penn State's been in the Big Ten 22 seasons. Which school has more bowl wins than anybody else in that span? Penn State. They have 11.
By the way, I think it's important to note, too, that the Big Ten was an underdog in all 10 of its bowl games.
Yes, they were. Now, it should be pointed out that when Penn State, going into New Year's Day, Penn State was the only Big Ten team in the last 22 years with double-digit bowl wins. And Wisconsin won to get themselves to 10-10, and Ohio State won and got themselves to 10-10. Michigan has 9 bowl wins. Iowa still is at 8. Michigan State's now won 3 bowls in a row. That's a record for them. They're now up to 6 since Penn State entered the Big Ten. The power in the Big Ten is going to be, and everyone knew it when it was aligned, is going to be the East. And now you have in the East Urban Meyer, and to be, again, let's be honest, I thought Urban Meyer and Ohio State would be really good this year, but I thought Michigan State would be better. I picked Michigan State to win. I also felt that Ohio State was 1 year away and that their best year was to come. Well, that's a frightening. Michigan has Jim Harbaugh now. I'm not a big I think Jim Harbaugh is an excellent coach, but I'm also not a big believer in magic wands. They're going to have to work hard to get them up, but they've got a guy, obviously, with cachet. No question. And the guy is an excellent coach. I mean, I don't take anything away from him. And you got James Franklin in Penn State, where you feel like, hey, look, they, I mean, that they took some steps forward this year, and they're a program that is on the rise here in this whole thing. You've got to be worried about them. Michigan State's the interesting one, where Mark D'Antonio's done a brilliant job, and they've lost Pat Narduzzi to Pitt. I mean, these things are to be expected when you have success. And the question is, has Michigan State peaked out? And maybe, you know, they got another year out of Connor Cook, which is huge. Have they peaked out, and might they slide back a bit in this whole thing? Or can they somehow sustain it, which I think is going to be hard to do. I think they're going to be good all the time, but I think they're going to be good and then have that like year or two of greatness and then good and a year or two of greatness. I mean, he'll keep the program at a high level, but that just on the outside looking in. We'll wrap it up in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com and happy 100 to Sunbury Motors, huh? Isn't that amazing? Sunbury Motors, 100 years? I mean, that being in business 100 years? Obviously, I'm more amazed than you are.
I'm waiting for the big celebration. I can't wait to see what Tom and the guys decide to do for the big celebration.
Are we invited?
I don't know.
I'll go.
Oh, good.
Hey, I think they're that important. I think they're that important. I'd go. I mean, for the most part, except for letting you drive some of their cars, I think they've had some great judgment.
There we go. That's what I was waiting for.
What? I talk to these guys. Go, you guys all right? Our thanks to Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Could the NFL go back to L.A.? Possible. Stan Kroenke wants to build an 80,000-seat stadium in Inglewood.